You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball here. I am Steve Rivera, and you're listening to 1030 The Voice. It is Wednesday afternoon, another breezy day outside. We have a big show today. I say that all the time, but this time I mean it. Actually, we have a big show all the time. Hey, at 5:20, we're going to have Frank Burleson, longtime friend, one of the best basketball minds that I know out of Los Angeles, Southern California area. He was kind of one of the originators of the top 100 in the Long Beach Press Telegram, all-time best players back in the college, the recruiting times for college basketball back in the day, late 80s, mid 80s, whenever, we'll ask when he started that. See what he's doing. He's kind of doing that again now, now that the newspaper business has kind of taken its lumps. We all kind of found different ways, and he's doing this for a number of different people. And we'll talk to him about it. Maybe talk to, he's seen some of the best Arizona players in the last 30, 40 years. So I wanted to get his impression of what he thought of who came here, how good they were, things like that. And talk maybe a little about the scandal, but it's kind of diminished. At 6:05, we're going to talk to Arizona Daily Star columnist Greg Hansen. Talk to him about 30 minutes about what's going on locally and just get his impressions on a lot of different things. Obviously, he writes about a lot of different things. And then at 6:30, we're going to talk to Lisa Veltre. She's the vice president of operations for the Roy Jones Jr. Boxing Promotions. They have a big card at Casino del Sol on Friday, on Thursday, tomorrow night. So we'll talk to her and get through the show pretty easily. I'm not sure about unscathed, but pretty easily. Wanted to talk to you guys for the next 13 minutes about what's going on. You may have heard already that the UA golf team lost in kind of dramatic fashion today, so they won't be repeat champions this year. But what a great run they had. They lost to Duke in the final two holes in Arkansas. They had a stroke lead, I think, going in. And the final two holes, and they lost to Duke. So what a great run for them.
But they made it to the Final Four. They were in the semifinals.
No question. That's not an easy task. Got back to a stroke or two, getting almost back to the finals.
And they defeated USC to get here. Mm-hmm. So nothing wrong with that either.
No. They did a great job. They always do. Coach Iannello is a heck of a good coach. You weren't my guy when we had her on. We'll probably have her on in the next week or so. Fantastic interview, a good lady who knows her game and a former player, of course. Fantastic with the ladies that she works with. So we'll try to get her on here in the next few days. Baseball starts a series with Washington State. It's kind of like a must win for them to get into the tournament, at least to get considered for the tournament. I don't think they're in anyway, given what they've lost all year. Now they've caught fire here in the last 2-3 weeks. And are finishing strong. I just don't know if that's going to be strong enough. So we'll see what happens to them in the next 3 days.
They go to Pullman for this?
They go to Pullman. Yeah. You ever been to Pullman?
Yes, I have.
You have? witness protection program, sir?
It's kind of something like that, yes. I was looking for somebody, an old friend of mine who lived in the area. And
Sasquatch?
No.
You know he's from there?
Yes, I do. I've met him.
You met Sasquatch. Were you the guy who took the picture, the grainy picture?
Yeah, of course. It was me, yes. No, I don't. I don't know Sasquatch from Yeti or Bigfoot. I don't know him from any of them.
So tell me, what the heck are you doing up in Pullman?
I was looking for an old friend.
Looking for an old friend in Pullman, Washington.
An old friend that I knew. She was from Long Beach, California. I knew her there when her family lived in Rolling Hills.
And, it had to be a woman. We go men chase women to strange places. You might as well have gone to Schenectady. than Pullman, Arizona, Pullman, Washington.
I guess so. I haven't been to Schenectady.
But you understand what I'm saying. Going to Pullman is like going out of your way.
It was definitely. I mean, getting there was a...
No question. You have
to fly into Spokane, and then somehow you got to get yourself down to Pullman.
90 miles away. You don't know. It's like I say here in Tucson. You don't come to Tucson to stay. You kind of pass through. Pullman, you kind of just get lost.
Yeah, if you're in Pullman, you're lost.
You get lost.
There should be a sign.
You took a left at Idaho.
That's something like that, right.
Yeah, I've been there like 23 straight times back when I covered the team, and the cops were there for a lot for speeders going from Spokane to Pullman. Called my then wife. I think I've told you the story. It was snowing so badly. I think it was the day that Tom Landry passed away, and I called my then wife with my kids. I said, you know what, if I don't make it back alive, just remember I love you. It was storming so bad and the roads were so bad. I said that, you know, I eventually got back and I said, I'll take that back. No, I'm joking about that. But those are the good old days of Pullman, Washington.
Well, the only good thing for me was I was there in the summertime.
Oh, good. It's perfect up there.
Yeah, it was very nice. Yeah.
Very nice. I have some relatives up in Spokane. What a great city. Nice college town. Gonzaga's up there, and Washington State is nearby, obviously. Pullman, they play in Pullman this next few days. And the softball team continues their nice little ride here, beginning on Friday. It seems like it's never going to come. We had planned on talking to Taylor McClellan yesterday. They got too late into the practice, as everybody might know, because I put it on Facebook and then I had to delete it. But I'm going to try to talk to her tomorrow in person that way, and just bring the recording to the house here, and we'll play it tomorrow. Looking forward to talking to her.
Why don't you just kidnap her and bring her to the studio?
Oh, sure. I'm too pretty for prison, sir. We won't do that.
Right.
But also news today, not that this is going to be a shock to Tucsonans and U of A fans, but the notice of NCAA allegations will be coming soon if they haven't arrived yet. There was a story on ESPN today that all the schools involved will be getting notices soon if they haven't had them now. It's nothing that we didn't expect, and this is the next wait and see. The NCAA people that were interviewed, or the people involved, or the principals.
So some of the schools were USC, LSU,
Kansas.
Kansas. Was Kentucky?
No. No, so they're going to all get notices from the trials from October to now, and they said it could happen swiftly or not. So it's just kind of just stuff that you already knew that was going to happen is officially now going to happen.
It seems to be moving a little faster than I expected. What do you think?
I think they're, to tell you, on course, because
maybe it depends on what they're going to be talking about.
They've been sitting on this for a while. They were told not to start their investigations until after the trial, but then they were given the okay to do it after the start of it, the initial. So here we are, almost 20 months later. 20 months later after the first initial raid, that September, late September day. I saw that you may have seen a colleague of mine, a friend of mine, Bruce Pascoe's story today in the Daily Star about Book's situation. He'll be going to a sentencing hearing, I guess, here in a couple of weeks, if not days. He had a lot of friends who were writing letters on his behalf. Of course, a great guy, good guy. I hope they can get him off on probation.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I think the jury's still out in terms of fans who like him or don't like him, because one, they like him because he's a good guy. Many don't like him because what he put everybody through. You know what I'm saying? So I get it. It's understandable, especially if you're a fan who doesn't want to see stuff like this happen. So we'll see it late in this month when he's sentenced for participating in this deal or whatever's with the NCAA.
Well, now that this has all come out in the open, maybe in the long run, something good will come of it.
Maybe. Well, we talked about it with Matt Moreno yesterday, which was a kind of surprise to me how they're going to scale back on the AAU tournaments this summer and probably beyond, because the NCAA has requested it. So less tournaments for the kids, more controlled environment, if you will. So that's a good thing. And anybody who knows me, who's followed me for the years of covering it with a citizen and beyond, I hate recruiting. I absolutely hate recruiting. Hate this AAU situation. In fact, I'll give you a quick brief of what happened, what I saw in Vegas. My kids were playing soccer. My kids play soccer. They didn't play basketball. So we were out with a group of adults at a bar at a hotel in Vegas, and sitting there, and it was during basketball recruiting time, and I would see the older kids, I'm talking 17, 18, guys who looked older but weren't, would kind of sneak into the bars and go in, hang out, and come back out. You know, and you know, when you're 17, 18, you're kind of being stupid, doing dumb things. That was one of them. And the hotel wouldn't catch them. It just wouldn't catch them, or we wouldn't see them being caught. But you know, when you're 17, 18, and you think you're bulletproof, that's what I saw. I didn't see it once. I saw it a number of times. And I thought, Vegas is not a place for that. It's just not. But Vegas is a fun place for adults to go, and that's where they happen to have these basketball tournaments.
17-year-olds, a bar. Mm-hmm. What's this, explain that to me a little bit. They're not allowed in there, right?
That's my point. They were going in and out.
And nobody was doing anything about it.
No. And there were just kids wandering around because they had nothing else to do, and you're in Vegas. It struck me as odd, but not surprising, because, hell, you're in Vegas and you're walking around, and you're 18 years old as a player, and you're kind of doing this. And I'm thinking, this is one of the bad things of having kids in Vegas. It's kind of what you see, you know. But it is what it is, and that was back in the day, and I'm sure it continues to happen, even without...
And any of these tournament locales, then we wouldn't want them in Las Vegas. We'd want them in other places.
Correct. But I don't think that's going to be avoided in Vegas. Bat said they were going to have a big tournament in Phoenix at Grand Canyon U later in June, so that was a good thing. You know what I'm saying. Just make the environment more basketball, kid-friendly, in terms of when it's just basketball. Let it be just basketball. But I never got it. Hey, let me tell you something. We took our kids to Vegas as well for soccer, big soccer events, and I get it. When they're bored and they don't have adult supervision, they'll do stupid things. Hey, I was young once, did stupid things too, so I get it. No fault, but it happens. I'm sure you were young and didn't do anything bad. I can't remember the last time I walked down water.
Don't remind me.
We don't want to go back that far.
Don't make me relive those times.
Yeah. So in a minute or so, we're going to get a hold of Frank Burleson out in L.A. I'll talk to him about a lot of different things. I hope he can spend some time with us to reminisce about the good old days and talk about some of the recruiting classes Arizona is bringing in now, because he follows that and he covers it a lot nationally. So let's do that. Let's go to a break here, Tom, here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Getting a hold of Frank Burleson right now. Look forward to this conversation. Through the years, he's done a fantastic job of doing recruiting nationally on the West Coast for a number of different people. I know he's doing it right now. I just wanted to touch base with him and maybe talk about some of the players Arizona has gotten through the years in recruiting, especially out of California, because he's seen them all play. Frank Burleson, how are you?
Pretty good, Steve. How you doing, buddy?
Fine, thank you.
Long time no talk.
Yes, long time no talk. Good to talk to you. I was thinking, you know who would be a good guest would be Frank Burleson, because one, he's been here so long, he knows of all the guys Arizona has recruited for the last 30-plus years, probably. How long have you been doing this?
Yeah, 30-plus is probably on the short side of it, buddy. I think, you know, because I would... As you know, I was working in newspapers when I was still in high school. So, right at 40-plus years, actually, because I'm now six. I just turned 64 a month ago.
You look pretty good for 64. And what's the newspaper?
I started out working for a couple local newspapers, and I worked for the Long Beach paper when I was a senior in high school.
Yes, I know that. Yeah.
All the way through 98, and I went to the Orange County Register for a couple of years, and Fox Sports, and then back to the Press-Telegram until I left the newspaper business in 2011. So, yeah, it's right on almost 8 years.
Yeah. But I was asking, what is a newspaper? I don't know what that is anymore.
It's this thing that when you would, you know, it's a funny story. I used to, way back when, before everything started going south, I took the, when I lived in South Orange County, so I would get the LA Times, Orange County Register. And back then, of course, USA Today, would they would deliver it on your driveway. So, you know, on a Sunday, when you take the Orange County Register and the LA Times, you go down in the driveway, pick it up, and you'd almost need like a crane to lift up the papers that were so heavy. Now, you know, I don't have to get the Register anymore. It's basically, you know, a non-entity. But you get the LA Times, and you could, it's so light, you could just spin it on a finger. You know, it's
right.
Because obviously it's, you know, we make jokes about it, but it's sad. But, you know, everybody always said, what is the internet? No, it was the internet, not so much in terms of a news source. It was the internet in terms of, you know, classified and retail advertising, which it basically, you know, took that away. You know, people didn't have to pay to sure. sell anything or buy anything anymore. And so it wasn't always just subscription was a part of it, but it was more so the advertising that newspapers sold that, you know, supported it. And
yeah.
that was gone. And voila, there went the newspaper. So it's sad, but it's reality. It's not going to change.
Right.
So we can't pine about the old days. And hopefully enough good journalists, that people who understand journalism, what it's supposed to be, and the good part of it, continue to pursue it. And it won't be in the classical newspaper form, but be it on the internet or, you know, online or any other forums. Hopefully people will continue, not just in sports, but in, you know, politics and civic coverage, you know, gives us good, solid journalism, because certainly
sure.
as a country and in a democracy, that's what we need to flourish. So.
Yeah. So let's get back to sports here real quick. Did you follow, I'm sure you did, much of the trials that have gone on with the basketball situation?
Yeah, kind of. You know, obviously I haven't been covering it per se, but, you know, certainly reading it over the last, you know, indirectly or directly since, what was it, September of
2017.
It's been better part of 18, more than 18 months now. Or
what did you make of it?
Month.
What did you make of the totality of it?
You know, the thing that kind of surprised me in the terms of, again, you'd have to be naive, you know, with somebody like me or you or, you know, John Wilner or anybody else who's covered college basketball and football for any number of years, you'd be naive not to think that there's, you know, be it, you know, certainly in the 70s, 80s, 90s, it was more boosters, and now everything is kind of as much more so than boosters. It's agent driven, you know.
Yes.
Agents
mm-hmm.
or people who aspire to be agents or people working for the agents in terms of extra benefits, if you will, or temptations or under the table, you know, for want of a better term, under the table type stuff to lure them to college. But it just as, you know, with the boosters, it was getting them to the college. With agents, obviously, it's getting the players, securing their ability to represent them when they do turn, you know, go to the NFL or go to the NBA. The thing that kind of surprised me is, and again, maybe I was a little naive, and especially, again, not naming names or casting stones at coaches, because everybody does things for their own unique reasons. But, you know, making money on the side, that's the thing that kind of stunned me, because some of these coaches, you know, at University of Arizona and SC and, you know, Auburn, and again, I hate to name names and to, you know, point the finger at them, but, you know, these are all guys who had, you know, they weren't making, walk-on coaches' salaries. They were making hefty sums that, in many cases, is much more than a lot of head coaches at the non-power conferences were making, and yet they were accused of, of trying to get extra money on the side with pushing players towards agents or whatnot. That's mm-hmm. the kind of thing that surprised me. And again, you know, who knows what reasons were behind it? Maybe they felt it were good reasons. But to me, if you're working at a program in a quote unquote Power Five conference, you know, Pac-12, Big Ten, you know, ACC, Big East, Southeastern conferences, or whatnot, you know, you're making good salaries. So something must have been up that you felt you needed a bit extra money and to do it by, you know, no excuses. You know what the NCAA rules are, and you were violating this. Promise me, you know, the stuff of guys taking benefits to go to schools or go to agents, you know, that's been going on for a while now. But the assistant coaches, you know, trying to profit or make extra money, it's the thing that kind of blew me away a little bit.
Let me talk to you real quick, specific to Arizona. Sean Miller, you probably know him fairly well, very well.
Yeah,
I've been here 10 years. He's been known to be a great recruiter, and he continues to be a great recruiter. Even after all this mess, he has one of the top five recruiting classes. So you're thinking, if that's the case, why did he even need to do it? Because we all know he's a good recruiter. And now he has a great recruiting class coming in. And then people ask me, so if he's actually paying the guys, and they say it sarcastically, then how does he still get these guys? Does that make sense?
Conversation is...
We're losing you.
Anything we hear, and I'm not trying to be naive or put my head in the sand or necessarily have Sean's back because
we're losing you, Frank. Your phone is going.
But, yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, yeah, we're good.
Yeah, okay, sorry about that. You said it. I mean, either parents and players and high school coaches or traveling team coaches don't think that any of the speculation means anything. And again, they're actively being involved in an NCAA investigation, you always worry about that. But again, what he's been able to do in the last year with all this cloud hanging over him in terms of, Nico Mannion. I mean, Nico Mannion is as good a player as Arizona has ever recruited, mm-hmm. Be it Sean Miller, be it Lute Olson, be it Fred Snowden, be it anybody. I mean, he's that good. And his parents are bright, smart people, and they're not naive, and they're not going to put their son in a position to go to a program that they're super, super worried that, maybe on probation or can't go to the tournament or whatnot. So, again, it just tells you the reputation and the charisma, the rapport that, Sean and his staff have with coaches, with the players and families they recruit. So, again, it's interesting. I think one thing is, speculation aside, this is something that's eventually going to play out. And with the NCAA, they don't do things quick in terms of enforcement and investigation. So, I mean, we may be well into next season or deeper before this situation and any speculation is finally resolved. So for the meantime, they got a great class coming in, some good quality players who will continue to get better, and it'll be another competitive Pac-12. And again, it's too bad, but again, it's just not in Arizona, it's a whole lot of programs, and again, what's going to transpire, what the NCAA is able to do with all the testimony that was in open court and sworn testimony. Ultimately, until we get a handle on what the NCAA does with that and how that translates into potential, NCAA sanctions based on rules violations, it's all speculation.
Sure. You mentioned Nico. I think everyone's excited about him handling the ball. Can you talk real quick about Josh Green, Mary Terry Armstrong, some of the other guys that are coming this way?
Josh Green is certainly kind of an Arizona guy. He was in town for a couple of years after coming from Australia before going to IMG for the last couple of years. I mean, he's athletically at 6'5 plus or whatever. He's as good a basketball athlete as there is in his high school class of 2019. I think the big concern, for him, the Arizona staff, and certainly the people that follow Arizona basketball is, how quickly. I think he's had another shoulder surgery. Yeah. He's had shoulder issues for the better part of a year now. So again, certainly, if those aren't healed and functional, he's going to struggle to be as effective as he should be. But if he's healthy, especially playing with Nico Mannion, who he played with I think 3 years with West Coast Elite program, formerly known as Earl Watson West Coast Elite. I mean, they're a great pair. I mean, they're a great you know, sort of like a, you know, a Stockton, Jeff Malone, you know,
Stockton Malone.
Stockton is, yeah. You know, not Stockton Malone, but more Jeff Hornacek, I guess is probably analogy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of, you know, two guard and a point guard. But again, Nico Mannion, you could put four average players around him and he's going to make them better than they are. I mean, he's one of the, you know, like Mike Bibby to a degree. And,
right.
You know, Lonzo Ball, a recent vintage guards who are not only going to put up numbers in terms of scoring and, you know, assists, but just by their presence and their decision-making and their feel for the game and their understanding of the game, they're going to make guys. It's a cliche, but he's one of those very rare guys, and there are not nearly as many of them as people assume, who actually makes players, you know, function better than they would if he wasn't on the court.
Right, right. My only concern, and obviously it's a heck of a great class coming in, my only concern, and I don't know if it's a concern of yours, and you've been doing this a lot longer than me, when you have a group of freshmen and the fan base and whoever are cringing or not cringing, I'm the one that's cringing, we're hoping that this group kind of puts the program back on the map and does great things. I have an issue with the freshmen because you're a freshman. That's a lot to ask of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And again, I think as good as, you know, Armstrong and Josh Green and the big center from Sierra Canyon, who's very, very good, I think is kind of a sleeper. And they got
Coloco?
A big kid from Minnesota.
Is that Coloco?
Coloco, Christian Coloco, yeah. Very good player. Shot blocker. I mean, he's going to be good. It won't be right away, but he has a chance to really, really be a year or two into his college career to be a dominant shot blocker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean he's good. I mean, but the last month or two of the season, he, you know, they won another state open division championship this year, and he was a big reason. You know, along with guys like Cassius Stanley and Kenyon Martin Jr. and Scottie Pippen Jr. But again, Nico Mannion is again as good as his class is. You know, top five, top six. He's far and away the most key element in this class because again, he's a guy who. Besides being a scorer and doing all the things he's going to do, he makes guys around him better. I mean, you throw him in the group that they had last year, and they probably win 8-9. You know, with guys assuming guys are healthy, they win 8-9 more games just by his presence because he's that kind of guy. In my humble estimation, you know, Cole Anthony's certainly a very, very good player and has got a lot, probably more national hype relative to rankings and things like that. But I think Nico Mannion, in my mind, is clearly the best high school point guard in the class of 2019 and the guy who, you know, I think, you know, if everybody around him plays well and Arizona plays well, I mean, not only, you know, potential Pac-12 freshman of the year and all conference, but if they play well enough and are in the hunt for a conference championship, I mean, he has a chance to be, you know, right there for player of the year, I think, in the conference. He's that good.
Frank, just because I don't know, who do you write for now or who do you do your work for now as you evaluate the kids?
Oh, I have my own website, burlesononbasketball.com, which is a free website, which is a lot of high school, a lot of college type stuff, but the bulk of my income comes from I have like a consulting scouting service for NBA teams and college programs. So, you know, I kind of evaluate high school players for colleges and college players for NBA franchises, and also the very best high school players. You know, I do a lot of background stuff and player analysis for the NBA programs because, again, as of now, unless the rules changed, NBA people are kind of limited into how often they get to see the very best high school players. So especially, you know, guys like Nico Mannion would be a good example, mm-hmm. or Cole Anthony, who I mentioned, or, you know, James Wiseman from Memphis, for example, are all guys who, you know, if things go the way they should and the rules stay the same, I mean, they're going to be, a year from now, they're going to be guys being talked about being potential lottery picks. So the NBA clients I have, they can rely on me to give them a foundation on the best high school players when they're still in high school so that they can kind of build a database and so that they're not really going in cold when these guys show up in college and, you know, in 3 or 4 months later, they're prepping for the draft.
You've been doing this a long time. Say it one more time. It's the Frank Burleson. Tell me again.
Burleson on basketball.com.
Burleson on basketball.com. So I advise anybody who's interested in basketball.
It's free. It's not like they have to pay it. They can go in. Especially, you know, the recruiting stuff in the next month with all the evaluation stuff and, you know, the guys are in or out and being talked about for the class of 2020.
You're a generous man, Frank. A generous man giving it out for free. Hey.
Well, a lot of that's just so I can keep my hand in the writing part because, you know, you want to just keep writing and doing those things. And the other stuff I do is more insightful, kind of conceptualized, you know, rule type player analysis instead of the kind of writing that, you know, we're used to as sports writers.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Let me ask you just to pick your brain on a few things. You've been doing this a long time, covered Loot, now Sean, and goes back even before that. Who are some of the best players to ever come here from the guys you evaluated? And let's say, I know Sean, he's easily the best player to ever come here, but let me throw some names at you if I can.
Yeah.
And I think this guy is probably the most underrated player to play here in the last 25 years, Chris Mills.
Yeah, Chris Mills, of course, was certainly got a lot of kind of negative publicity because of the controversy when he enrolled at Kentucky with his father and stuff. But, you know, Fairfax High School, I think 3-time All-LA City player, you know, went to Kentucky for a year and then certainly went to Arizona and had some great U of A career for Coach Olson, just a tremendous, tremendous player, you know, from a program that's turned out dozens and dozens of high-quality players, LA Fairfax. And, you know, you mentioned Sean Elliott. Sean Elliott was probably the breakthrough recruit.
Mm-hmm.
You got to say that although in his first recruiting class, you know, Steve Kerr was a pretty good Steve Kerr. People forget, you know, what he's doing now. But I remember Steve Kerr went to Palisades High in L.A., which is where, you know, Chip England, who's now a coach for the San Antonio Spurs, was class of 79. And Kiki Vandeweghe, who works for the NBA now, and whole lot of people went to Palisades. But Steve Kerr was either going to go to Gonzaga or Cal State Fullerton, and Coach Olson at the old Olympic Development League at Cal State LA watched Steve Kerr play for, I think, the South Bay team. And, you know, Coach Olson, I mean, he was one of the great ones. So many great coaches are great coaches for a reason. On-the-court reasons. On-the-court reasons and strategy and things like that and ability to teach. Coach Olson was a guy who, and Roy Williams is another one of those who just, you know, he kind of loved just sitting in the
basketball,
gym watching guys play.
Basketball,
even if they were guys he wasn't necessarily going to recruit for whatever reason, he enjoyed watching players. And I think that's what put him ahead of so many other outstanding coaches was he had a passion for sitting in the game long hours when it's not exactly comfortable sitting in bleacher seats and just watching guys actually watching the evolution of players and the progress players made. You know, he was a great, great evaluator, and you really can't say that about a whole lot of other very, very good coaches.
What about Brian Williams?
Oh, Brian Williams was, you know, again, another guy kind of steeped in tragedy with the way his life ended, but just a great, great shot blocker, shot blocking, powerful center. I think if he had, you know, God bless him, but if he had a little bit more passion for the game, he really would have been a 12, 13, 14-year-old, 13-year NBA guy who would have been one of the best 6'10-plus guys in the NBA for a long time.
Yeah, what about Damon Stoudamire?
Oh, yeah, Damon Stoudamire, you remember, came from in the class of, I think it was class of 91, and there was a great group of guards up and down the West Coast, and it was four tremendous ones. Damon Stoudamire from Portland, K.J. Roberts from the Sacramento area, ended up going to Cal, and two Southern California area guys, Kevin Ollie, who went to Crenshaw and committed to Connecticut, signed with Connecticut, and obviously played, I think, at an Elite Eight with Connecticut, the one that lost to UCLA in the West Regional Finals in 95. And then Ty Ascendi, Long Beach Poly, who, again, you know, for, you know, one of the iconic shots in NCAA tournament history, that length of the court layup shot he had against Missouri in the second round that probably saved Jim Herrick's job at the time. And then certainly carried them on to a national championship. So again, and Stoudamire certainly was one of the sub 6-foot guards who, you know, at a time when a whole lot of guys his size weren't really flourishing in the NBA. He was one of those guys who was a 12, 13-year-old outstanding pro despite being, 5'11 or so.
What who did you think, or I don't know, we had a vote back then, player of the year, Ed O'Bannon, Damon Stoudemire. They split it, obviously, but who had a better year?
Well, Stoudemire is certainly a senior year. They won a national, Ed O'Bannon's team won a national championship. I think so many guys now, and Steve, that people tend to forget. I tend to look at players, great high school players, don't necessarily mean they're going to be great college players. Mm-hmm. And great college players don't necessarily mean you're going to be outstanding NBA players, but that doesn't take away from what you were in college. And I think Ed O'Bannon, as you well remember watching him play for UCLA, I mean, he was as dominant a player at his size as it was in college basketball. And again, unfortunately for, health reasons or whatever reasons, he never developed into a quality NBA player. So people kind of look at him as a bust. But again, that's not fair. You sort of like the great, great Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks who never become NFL quarterbacks. Well, that doesn't mean he wasn't a great college quarterback.
Right,
and again,
right.
I look at a guy like O'Bannon and certainly fits that description.
Right, right. No, they both had great years in 95, both senior years. And Damon was, I still think, and I don't know what you think, but it's Sean Elliott, Damon Stoudemire in the best 1-2 categories of best players of all time. And I say that for Damon, and not to disrespect Bibby and all that, but Bibby was here for 2 years. You know what I'm saying? Some of the best players.
Exactly.
Because they spent 4 years here, that long vision.
The volume of work that they're able to put on, certainly.
Yes.
Again, and it's unfortunate, but it's true. Like these days, it's kind of hard to all time great college players. Well, do you put a guy in who was in for 1 year? It's almost like there should be a separate category for the great college players who were only in college. The Anthony Davises of the world.
Sure. Sean Miller's players would not compete with Lutz players because they're only here for a year or two, given Markkanen's and the Aitons. What about Jason Terry?
Jason Terry, it's funny because Jason Terry, I had a chance to see a lot, and he was kind of an unknown going into the summer before his senior year, and he played great, Seattle kid played great at the Superstar Camp in Santa Barbara, and then he was playing in the BTI, BCI in Arizona, and I remember playing in one of the side gyms at Arizona State. I think it was like the women's gym or a recreation gym. And every college coach was out there, and they watched him. His team played against Mike Bibby's team, and I think that was the first team he'd ever played against Bibby. And, of course, he was going into his senior year, and Bibby was going into his junior year. Just a great, great matchup. And I think when people saw that and saw how well he played against Bibby, I think that's when, the Lutes and Coach Olson and everybody else jumped on Jason Terry, and of course went into not quite as hyped a player as a lot of players Arizona's had, and had a great Arizona career and certainly a long, long, long outstanding NBA career.
No question. I could talk to you like this all day. You know that, Frank. Let me throw one more at you. One of the enigmas that came through here, a heck of a good player. We didn't know how good of a player at the time, but Gilbert Arenas.
And again, a guy who didn't really have the super big rep until the spring and summer before his senior year. And again, played for the Pumps team and just was never people. Well, he's not a great shooter. He's not two guard size. He's not a point guard, but just an outstanding, outside store, a scorer, terrific, terrific scorer who certainly was a terrific, terrific score in the NBA, and certainly people forget this now. He was one of those guys, one of the first guys to get one of these monster free agent contracts.
Right, right. Second round draft choice, too, by the Golden State Warriors.
Yep.
Yeah, came out early, too. Let me throw another one, just in case, just for safe. Lauren Woods.
Yeah, St. Louis kid. Remember, 7-footer, long, lean. I think he started out at Wake Forest.
Yes, apprentice to what's his name?
Tim Duncan.
Tim Duncan,
played
yes.
for Dave Odom. Yeah, and then, of course, went to Luton, had an outstanding career. Again, a guy who was not really the thick, bulky, muscular type, kind of lean, wiry guy. but a very, very good player who probably Lute got him probably to play harder than he'd ever played before in his life.
Great shot blocker. Great shot blocker.
Yep.
Yeah. Frank, I appreciate your time. We got to do this again because you'd like to talk
about... Yeah, like I say, for the next month, I'll see everybody and their mother, and I'll see everybody that, you know, the Wildcats and certainly everybody within the Pac-12 who they're recruiting. So if you want any insight into that, I'd be glad to give it to you.
We'll talk to you in June. We'll talk to you in June or July. Thanks a bunch.
Sounds good, buddy. Great to visit with you, Steve.
Same here. Thank you, Frank. Great, Frank. That was Frank Burleson. Does his own stuff with the, on the website now. Longtime friend. Obviously, he's been in this business a heck of a long time. A lot of the power brokers in the NBA and all that pay him, I guess, fairly well because he's doing this for a living now. Let's take a break here, our final break of the hour, 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. Hey, thanks for putting on one of my requests. You must have got the memo or just got the music.
Taking care of business.
Yes. Hey, well, good segue. Good segue, Tom. I was really talking to Frank Burleson out of Southern California. Been in the business a long, long time. Kind of reminiscing about the players I covered back in the day. It's funny, he talked about Steve Kerr being recruited by you, by Lute. And it's funny, the story I got and I put in my book was that Lute went to go look at Kiki Vandeweghe in Southern California at the same school. And they were playing in the gym. And here was this kid, Steve Kerr, this blonde-haired, scraggly kid playing, and he was shooting some shots and doing fairly well. Lute turned to Bobby and says, "What do you think?" He says, "I don't think so. He can't play here. Can't play in Arizona." And well, lo and behold, see what happened. And obviously, they joked about it at the time because he became this iconic player here at U of A, beloved and one of the favorite sons of the program.
I wonder what Lute saw in him that, in spite of what that other guy said, made him want to go with Steve anyway.
Was he
popping in threes or something?
Yeah, just long range shooter. He could do what he did then, but just kind of this smallish kid, skinny kid. I remember Pete Williams talking about it. When he showed up on campus, he was this guy that you'd think, oh, okay, whatever. Then they'd give him the ball in the corner. Boom. He'd hit every shot. Boom. Hit a shot. Throwing the ball to him. Boom. He hit the shot. And then you could tell that he was very smart, cerebral, and could get things done. One of those non-athlete guys and a fierce competitor. In fact, I think one of the most fierce competitors on the team and probably not noted as often is Matt Muehlbach. Just one of those guys I hate to lose. In fact, he never lost in McHale through the years of his career, getting to the Final Four a time or two. But those things get kind of never talked about because they're not the athletic dunkers and all that stuff. But heck of a good player. Heck of guys that you kind of want to pick in the second round, third round. You know, when you pick guys, you know, pick Sean and Khalid and these guys. But you have these guys on your team because they refuse to lose and they love to win. They know how to win.
Get that balance that you need on the team so the team will be cohesive.
Exactly. Perfect. That's a good word, balance. You need that balance. Sometimes you don't see it. I think there was a great quote yesterday, and I saw it from the Boston coach of the Celtics talking about your best player. I think he was talking about Irving. Your best player may not be your best teammate, and that's not good. Because if you're not a good teammate but you're a heck of a player, what good does it do? You fracture the whole team. And the last I checked, basketball was a team game.
We who play together will win together.
Yes, no question. Did you see that Juwan Howard has been named the Michigan head coach? The former Michigan guy is now the Michigan coach?
Well, that sounds poetic.
Yeah, sounds poetic. Well, see, he was at the Miami Heat the last couple of years, I think, a few years, and now he's the head coach of his alma mater.
What do you think about the Laker new head coach? What's his name? Volker?
Yeah. I don't know. It's not a sexy name. It's not a crazy name. He does have Jason Kidd, and I know that the talk has been that he's going to kind of bide the time until Kidd can take over. He's not looking over his shoulder, obviously. And then guess what? The check's still cash, so he'll be fine. That whole situation with the Lakers, though, is so dysfunctional. It's a family of dysfunction. I don't know if they're going to get through this mess with or without a good coach. There's too many craziness, or too much craziness.
I heard a rumor that if LeBron decides to take free agency status, the L.A. Clippers were already interested in talking with him.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that would be a decent fit. The thing about it is, do you want him to kind of fracture your whole situation? Because he would do that. He's one of those guys that goes in, takes control, and then your coach is gone by the end of the year. I don't know. It's a tough situation.
But they're saying, apparently, he wants to stay in Southern California. He likes Southern California,
sure.
But his son is in high school there, and he doesn't want to take him out of high school. He wants him to finish his high school career in Southern California.
In LA. Yeah. Well, he has a lot of property out there, too. No, I get it. I get it. L.A., the Clippers, or whomever. And he's at the end of his career anyway. He's now a producer. He does a lot of different things. When you make billions and millions, you could do whatever you darn please. At one point, I made $20. I don't know. I made $20.
You thought about retiring?
I thought about going to dinner. I think about retiring every day. But then again, I need to live until the end of the week. So that's how I live my life. Day to day, as most of us do. And a player to be, you know, when I'm be traded, for a player to be named later, and a broken bat, pretty much. I hope that back still works. That's what I'll be traded for.
Well, we all hope that. Especially when you get to be my age.
Yes. I'm not sure I'll reach your age, but that's for a different day. Different day. Hey, we got a minute left here. Good hour, I guess. Talk to Frank Burleson.
I was very interested in your interview with Frank Burleson. I liked that. That was good stuff.
Yeah, I liked what he had to say. He's been here so long. He knows about all the players. My whole thing is he remembered all the schools they went to and quality of players.
His information and evaluation on the players of yesterday and the players of today and the future were just right on.
Yeah. That's what you do when you make the bucks that he's making, do the evaluations. I can't remember. What's your name? Tom? Is that right?
It used to be.
Yeah, okay.
You're going to give me another name?
Yeah. Well, don't tempt me. Hey, let's take a break here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Come back with Greg Hansen at the next hour.